Welcome to another episode of Ed Luminaries with Alejandra Zertuche, CEO of Enflux, who brings you powerful educator perspectives hailing from all walks of life. Get inspired and obtain great takeaways that you can apply to help set your students up for success. Sometimes all it takes is to hear how innovative educators approach similar problems and overcome obstacles to support breakthrough academic success.
Hey everyone, thank you for joining us today. I'm Alejandra Zertuche and you're listening to Ed Luminaries. In this podcast, we're talking with educators and educational leaders to find out what they're thinking and working creatively to drive student success. In today's podcast, what you need to know to survive the self-study, we're going to hear from Dr. Megan Melchiorek, Director of Assessment and Assistant Professor at Wilkes University. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's an honor to have you here.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So tell us more about yourself. How did you start your journey in the world of education?
So my journey is a little bit more circuitous, I guess, for somebody in the higher ed realm, particularly in pharmacy education. So I started my career as an educator in K-12. I got a degree in English and communications thinking I was going to be a journalist. And then the market fell out of journalism and print news and made it sort of hard to take that path. So I went back to school and went to something that I've always loved to do, which was teaching and helping students learn. And I got a master's degree in secondary education and spent 5 years teaching 9th through 12th grade English. So you wouldn't think necessarily an English teacher would be a data person. We tend to be more on the, like I like to say, the softer side of Sears and talk about feelings and all that gushy stuff. So it really came in, about the time of PSSAs and Keystones in Pennsylvania, these benchmark and cumulative standardized tests that the state required us to use as measures. And I was tasked with a group of other English teachers on improving our scores. And I fell in love with looking at data, with charting progress, with how my students' eyes lit up when they saw themselves perform better because they could see the track of progression in the classroom, right in my classroom on my walls. And nothing was hidden. They were constantly getting feedback. And I just saw how valuable that was and started incorporating more of it into what I was doing and really seeing the results of that. And then I went back for a PhD in an interdisciplinary studies program. So I like to say I know kind of a little bit about everything. You know, it pulled in psychology and education and ethics and philosophy and all sorts of even healthcare and public health and all these different professions to get us this human development doctorate. And I really at that point pivoted into assessment even more because I thought if I'm a human development expert, then what better way to use my skills than to develop education for students and faculty that work for everybody involved. So it's kind of windy. And then I started working in programmatic and academic assessment in the liberal arts. And I took a risk. I applied for a job in a pharmacy program. And I thought, nothing risked, nothing gained. Maybe I can learn a little bit about this discipline. And, pharmacy, I took a chance on pharmacy and they took a chance on me. And it's worked out really well.
That's fascinating. And around what year did you start helping the pharmacy program? And by the way, which pharmacy program was it?
So I was at Binghamton School of Pharmacy. It was a new program. I was there during their first 2 years with students, which was exciting, and their candidate status accreditation visit, which was also just incredibly eye-opening. So I started there in 2017, two months after I had defended my dissertation and graduated.
Oh my God. So going through dissertation, going through self-studies, going through accreditation, that's a lot of work to handle at the same time.
Yeah. But you know what? It's all like, if you think about it, it's all sort of bureaucratic in a sense, right? You're meeting somebody's metrics that they've set forth. You have a really well-defined goal. A dissertation's a pretty well-defined goal. You might define it yourself, but it's pretty well defined. And I think accreditation is a similar, similar process. You have this well-defined goal that you're trying to reach and a lot of really clear ways in which to meet it. And I kind of thrive in those situations, I think, because there's room for creativity, but there's very clear boundaries. And I find that fun, you know, to work within the boundaries, but to expand your creative mind at the same time is a lot of fun to me.
Absolutely. I wish everything was as defined as a dissertation or a project that has measurable outcomes. Because as you know, when you're trying to accomplish a lot of things, if you cannot check off something, if you have that kind of personality, you feel like you didn't accomplish much, right?
So. I love like wide-ranging conversation. I love tangents. I love going down super fun paths. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to be like, all right, we need to get back to the thing that we're here for. We need to kind of tune in. And it's just sort of the nature of higher ed that we're all thinkers, but we have to kind of rein ourselves in. So anytime we have those bumpers, I'm happy.
Exactly. It's like playing bowling with the safety bars on the side, right? It's like, let me go wherever I want to go, but keep me within these boundaries. Exactly. So, we need those for everything. That's so fascinating. Can you tell us more about what are the things that you saw, like what were the differences or similarities between K-12 and programmatic assessment at a pharmacy school? What are the things that you see that are similar or different when it comes to assessment and accreditation?
That's a really good question, because normally my experience in K-12, I don't want to say it's dismissed, but on the higher ed level, I was very early on told not to compare higher ed to K-12, that it would be, you know, it would be something that would make faculty and people who work in higher ed upset because of the comparison with what some people think is lower education, K-12. However, K-12 has been immersed in the world of assessment in data-driven decision-making for many years prior to what has come to higher education through even regional accreditation. You know, I'm in the Middle States region, so we are the Middle States Commission on Higher Education is who accredits all K through higher ed programs. And they've even tightened up their standards, but that only happened a few years ago. So, you know, you see these really tight standards that we're seeing come from accrediting bodies now, but a lot of that was sort of pioneered on the K-12 level with states requiring very strict measures for performance, both on the student level, the programmatic level, and on the school level. You know, how's your entire school and school district functioning within your state? So I feel like there's been a lot of that progression coming up from K-12 into higher ed and being able to show that value. So in pharmacy though, they are far more accredited or the accreditation standards are far stricter than in a lot of other programs. And I think that's true across healthcare disciplines versus non-healthcare disciplines, if we want to be binary like that. Because there are others like business and other programs that have outside accreditors as well. But pharmacy, nursing, and some of the others, we have these really strict standards that we need to meet. And I find that to be protective for everybody involved. You know, if we're here for the best interest of our students, then it's really good to have guidelines so that we know that we're doing all we can to meet the needs of our students and therefore meet our own needs. You know, to me, if we're meeting the needs of our students, everything else sort of follows.
It's almost like those boundaries that we were talking about, right? Some guidance that, because if you read the accreditation standards, they're just giving you some guidance and a minimum requirement of kind of what we need to be compliant on so that we can ensure student success and high quality of education. Mm-hmm. But you can do, I mean, way more than what the accreditation standards are asking for. And in fact, most institutions do more than that. But it's nice to have that set of rules or guidelines saying, this is what you have to meet at a minimum, but you can do even more than this.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we're able to just meet our needs and meet our needs of our students, recruitment becomes easier, stakeholder input becomes mm-hmm. easier because everybody sees your value. It's transparent. And students are our greatest word of mouth, they're our greatest, advocates when we do things correctly and when we take their interests in. So I think that the accreditation standards being what they are and allowing for the freedom, but also being protective for everybody is just so much more inspiring and gives us so much more ability to do great things because we know what we need to do. You know, we're very clear about what we can and can't do. And then once we've done that, it's like, oh, the world is open to us.
Exactly. I think my two favorite things about an accreditation report, which is the self-study, is continuous quality improvement. That has to be implemented. That has to be in the culture of the institution and the university, because there's always room for improvement, especially in healthcare. Mm-hmm. Things change and they're changing rapidly. So how can you make sure that the students are up to the new guidelines? Mm-hmm. The second one is outcome-based, mm-hmm. student outcomes. Yes. I love that they're focusing more on database evidence and less on the process. Right. I think that the old way of doing accreditation was more about, tell me about the processes, tell me how you're helping the students at risk, tell me how you're doing continuous quality improvement. But now it's like, okay, it's great that you're doing this and it's well written, but where's the data? Where's the evidence?
Sometimes I feel like, you know, it's great to come up with good ideas, but if we never test them, we don't know if they're good ideas. So if we never go back, and you know, there's a lot of hard work to be done in moving things forward, and it can be really easy to say, well, we did the hard work and now it's done. We don't go back again, but we don't know if the hard work was worth it. And to me, it gets demoralizing to constantly do hard work and not see the value. So I love being able to say, hey, we did this thing and look what we got out of it. Isn't this awesome? So that continuous quality improvement is really just so valuable to what we do. So I'm so happy the accreditation standards have worked so much assessment in across the entire document. The questions are constantly being asked about, how are you assessing this? How are you closing the loop? How are you communicating this out? And really building that culture of assessment. So people like me aren't just somebody who sits in an office and stares at a screen all day, that we're out making an impact. We're working closely with faculty to help them in learning best practices, because so many of them are content experts, but haven't been given the tools in education. So I see that as a value of adding that continuous quality improvement and that culture of assessment really makes people see the value of having somebody like me, the value of having more assessment-based platforms and more data and useful data, you know, not just data for the purpose of it, because we see that too, and that's frustrating. But just that meaningful, getting to that meaningful data so that we can constantly improve, you know? If you don't want to improve, what's the point? You just get so stale.
Exactly. I mean, you have to measure what you want to improve, because if you don't know where you're standing, how do you know if it's working, not working, and what's the next step to take to make improvement?
Exactly.
And as you know, the biggest challenge is the amount of data that we're collecting, because as you mentioned, the accreditation standards are focusing more on assessment, mm-hmm. which means assessment tools, collecting data. And now how do you leverage all of that amount of data so that you can have actionable insights?
Yes. Yeah. And actually one of the things that shocks faculty the most that they hear me say is, we don't need to assess everything. We don't need to assess every last thing our students do down to the granular detail. You know, we need to assess the things that are valuable, but start thinking about what the value really is about the things that you want to assess, because I don't want to waste anybody's time, students, faculty, the accreditors, anybody, in creating things that aren't bringing us value.
Exactly. Like there's a well-known book called Measure What Matters. Mm-hmm. And it talks about the importance of measuring what really matters. So you don't have to measure every single thing, but you need to measure what you really want to improve or achieve. Mm-hmm. And they cannot be just achievable. They have to be beyond that, because if you set yourself, when you go and run, for instance, that happens to me, I'm like, just getting to that stop sign and I'm going to start walking and taking a break. And I'm struggling to get to the stop sign. And once I'm there, I'm like, okay, I can keep running to the other stop sign. So it's nice to have that far search reaching goal so that you can exceed your expectations, but you need to know what those goals are.
Yes, I'm a runner too. So for me, but I live in a rural area, so it's not stop signs, like big tree. And then, so I know that feeling well.
Exactly. And the biggest tree is the self-study.
Yes, it
right?
is.
The biggest tree for a school when it's out there running and trying to accomplish a marathon is the self-study. Can you tell our listeners, we might have some listeners that are familiarized with a self-study, but for those that are not, can you explain what a self-study is and what triggers it?
So a self-study is basically an internal look at your entire program. And it's a self-report on an investigation, if you want to call it that, that you've done of your own work for the past however many years. In pharmacy, if you are successful with your investigation, if we want to, your self-study, you get 8 years. So in that 8 year span, you should be continuing work that will help you write another investigatory report in 8 years. Some programs are shorter, some programs are longer, but the idea is for you really to take a look at yourself and be honest about what you've done well and where you can improve, resources you might need, resources that have been successful, and then to hand that over to your peers. So I think, you know, one of the biggest things I would want to drive home with somebody who doesn't know about an accreditation visit is that these are your peers. These are people who are working in the same field at other schools that are kind of like yours. And, you know, they're really just there to make sure that what you write down is what you really say. So the whole process, I feel, is really collaborative across schools. And there's a lot of, you know, cross-pollination that happens because of self-study. So I think, you know, people think it's really scary at first because the idea of, oh, the accreditors are coming, you know, it kind of sounds like a Paul Revere modern age, right?
Yeah.
The accreditors are coming. But I think if you embrace it for what it really is, which is a look at yourself and then a handover to your peers to make sure that what you're seeing in yourself is what's really happening, is an awesome way to reframe the entire process in my mind.
By the way, that's a wonderful description of the self-study. We should write that down and share it with everyone. I love it. I love it. It's incredible.
Thank you.
I just want to start a self-study right now. No, I'm kidding. So tell us how long, like what triggers a self-study and okay. When do you start a self-study?
So the trigger will be either it's your window is up, your 8 year window is up, if they're coming in a certain amount of time, or if you've had an unsuccessful visit, the trigger might be the fact that you had an unsuccessful visit. So they're coming back to see in a shorter time frame to see what improvements you've made. Again, you've recognized a problem, they've recognized the problem, and they want to make sure that everybody is keeping in the lane to get to that. So that's what triggers it. I'm sorry, you asked when should you start?
Yes, for instance, I know most schools start about 18 months before the accreditation visit, which is the site visit.
Yep.
Was that the case?
About 2 years, a little more than that, about 2 years in advance. We had had a previous successful visit the 8 years prior, but internally we felt the process wasn't shared across the entire school. It was, you know, a couple people who kind of holed up and did it. And you know, there were some missteps along the way. There were some things that didn't go well in the creation of the document. And you know, while the visit went well itself, and you know, they were reaccredited, everybody just sort of was left with the feeling that we could have done better. We could have, this process could have involved more people. It could have felt less rushed. So we started 2 years in advance, and started with a committee made up of, you know, academic affairs. Our assistant dean of academic affairs, Jen Malinowski, was our fearless leader and kept us all organized and is just outstanding in that role. She doesn't become the dean somewhere someday. I don't know. And included faculty, you know, so we had, you know, 5 or 6 faculty members on this committee, included myself, experiential education. And we had, for the entire 2 years, we had student representation. They stayed with us, the same 2 students stayed with us the entire time, attended all of our meetings. And really got to the point, you know, in higher ed, we tend to put on this, like, we'll call each other doctor when students are around, which always feels a little put on, but it's out of respect. And I understand why we do it, but they were with us for so long. It got so casual and formal. And I think we all just saw them as peers eventually. So we started early, we involved so many different stakeholders that the process just at the end, everybody felt involved along the way. And if I can't imagine anybody in our school, or as we call ourselves, our family, doesn't know something about the self-study. It's just not possible.
And because I've been working with you for the past, I want to say 3 months or so, because we're helping you with Influx, I know that you went through the self-study during COVID. So you went from having this amazing initiative in office, on campus, to going virtual. So that's why we're here today, right? To talk about which is what you need to know to survive the self-study. So how did you keep that momentum going?
It was really difficult at first. You know, we had done a lot of things in person. We engaged in a charrette process, which is a way to get stakeholder feedback. And it's usually done in person, small groups, focused, targeted on what you want them to talk about, sort of like small informal focus groups that you go through within an hour or two, if you've never done a charrette process. So we had done a lot of things in person, and we sort of were really feeling that momentum. So when the pandemic hit, it was sort of, okay, now what do we do? You know, there was a brief period where we were like, well, maybe we won't have our visit. We're not sure what they'll do. Second, they said, no, we're still coming in October. We needed to do something. And then there's, you know, there's the pandemic, and then there's also the natural lull that occurs between the submission of your self-study document and their arrival. It's about a 6-week period. Mm-hmm. And in that time, it can be really easy to be out of sight, out of mind. You know, you're no longer writing the document. You're no longer creating data views for the document. Mm-hmm. You're no longer discussing what goes in the document. It's done. It's been handed over. And you're just waiting, you know? So it's very easy to say, I'm just done. I'm just done thinking about it. I'll think about it again when they're here. So we knew we had to do something to get people back. Both from the pandemic, the fog that has kind of covered all of our brains in the daily stress of dealing with this and teaching during this and delivering programs, all of that, and just the natural tendency to forget about something when it's not in front of your face all the time. So as a committee, we decided we needed to put out these weekly blasts and just sort of target information that we felt was really important for people to know. Not the entire document, not all 25 standards. We didn't need to overwhelm people. We just needed to get out last minute, sort of inspirational, but also informative pieces for a couple reasons. Bring people back in, give them talking points if they're asked questions about a topic that maybe they are feeling a little uncomfortable with, or even if they know a lot about, just a quick refresher. And to remind them that we're still there, like, hi, the self-study team is working, we're still here. So we came up with this idea of weekly blasts. And again, Jen, our leader, came up with the idea of calling it the what's, what you need to know to survive self-study. And she took the first one and she wrote this beautiful email with a Visio of all of the things we had accomplished in the past 8 years, because that was the biggest question. People were like, well, what have we done? And if you don't have assessment data to show what you've done, it gets really hard to answer that question. So that Visio went back 8 years and said, here's all of the things that we've done. And that was a good reminder to people that, you know, even though some of the assessment data that we had is newer, because my role at the school was new, we've still been working, you know? So that was a nice entryway into reminding people of all the hard work that they had done in 8 years. And then, as you know, I did a video to bring
yes.
up to speed.
I love the video. As a fact, I would love to play that video if we can. Let me see. I'm opening right now so that people can hear. I love the beginning of the video. We're and some confetti goes up.
That was my favorite part, was the confetti.
And I, you know, I love that you're not just looking at either an image of you talking to them, but it's interactive. It's engaging. And then behind you, you have those big spreadsheets telling them, this is the information that we're going to review and the things that we need to be aware of.
Yeah. And I, you know, my assessment plans are detailed, and that's a good thing and a bad thing. Sometimes it's good because it's very transparent and very clear about what we're measuring, but it's bad because people can get overwhelmed. So bringing it back to like, hey guys, we focus on these three things and we set measures and here's what you need to know, and really doing it in a way that, again, trying to engage people. I like email. I mean, I'm a millennial, so yeah, you know, my phone is always with me. My tech is always with me. But I think we miss something in connection there. So that's why I felt the video was important to do. And everybody can watch a 4-minute video. You can put it on when you're cooking dinner. You know, you don't have to look at my face. It's fine. You can listen to me talk. But it just felt like in this time when we're just so many emails, and even more emails now that we're all remote, like, I just don't want it to get lost in the shuffle. And I want it to be at the forefront of everybody's minds. So it worked. And then we had two more videos that were successful where other people in the school made videos, and it really just got everybody back on track. And we entered it with this, I like to say, like, we didn't enter it dragging people across the finish line. We didn't have administrators saying like, all right, guys, come on, I'm bringing you in, you know? We had everybody finish, you know, sort of running the race together and finishing together as a team. And that just more than anything, more than the success of our self-study, to me, the value of creating a culture of assessment and a culture of teamwork goes well beyond an 8-year period of an accreditation document. It goes well beyond the expectations of our accreditors, and it just pays dividends time and time again.
It sounds so energizing because, yep, we go through the same thing when we work as a team to either overcome a challenge or to do new things or accomplish new things. You just feel that energy, right? So it's energizing because besides completing the self-study, I'm sure that you transmit that energy to the students. Mm-hmm. And they're also taking classes online. They're remotely completing the program. So I can feel how maybe faculty were engaged to transmit that energy to the students.
Absolutely. And our students they're any school's best assets. They really, but they are our best asset. And, another thing we did to kind of, it wasn't, you know, part of this, energizing push, but it was certainly part of a preparation push, was the dean, the assistant dean, and myself ran mock self-study visits with all of the committees and the students in the weeks leading up.
Virtual mock visits. Yes.
We did a full day where Scott Stoll, our dean, Jen, and myself acted as the accreditors. And we went through the blue book and some other questions with all of the committees. And when we got to the student session, it was just like, man, if this is how all the committees go, I could sit back and relax. I mean, they were so engaged in the process. They were able to talk about what we had done, talk about how their feedback was incorporated. I mean, I was blown away by, again, you know, when we engage them, they engage back. And so I was blown away by how well our students, or how much they value what we would think is something they wouldn't, an accreditation document, a bureaucratic document. They were all about it. And I can't be more thankful than for that. I really
That's amazing to hear, because there's nothing better than students engage in the quality of the program. Yeah. Because that's what they're receiving, and that's what their fellow students and friends are going to receive. Yeah. And making sure that it's top-notch education, it's extremely important. And the students know at first sight, right? They're sitting in the classrooms or sitting at home watching the lectures and everything else. And
yeah, I mean, you always have like your negative Nellies, your people that won't like your students or your people. It's across all parts of your job, right? Whether it's students or other stakeholders or coworkers who just don't, you know, they just don't like anything, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But you know, that sometimes the voices get loud enough where there's so many people who, you know, want to have an input, and you just have to, you just have to pay attention, you know? And I think that's really, as an assessment person, it's just paying attention.
Yeah. And what was the feedback from faculty, and what are the things that you think need to be improved? So what's the continuous quality improvement portion of this method?
Well, I mean, it's always about more involvement. So, you know, someday would I love to be able to turn over a lot of the things that I do on a regular basis to faculty governance? Heck yes. I'd love to get to the point where I could say to one of our faculty, you write the IPE standard, because there's no reason for me to put my hands on it. And we have some of that already. So I think that's the biggest thing for me is really just more stakeholder engagement and just building upon that energizing feeling of, you know, yeah, the self study is over, but that doesn't mean we don't keep getting better. And the faculty feedback has just been outstanding. You know, one of the big challenges as an administrator going through an accreditation document and a self study is that you know most of the answers because you have a top down view. But ironically, the accreditors and the site team, they don't want to hear from you because they know you know that. They want to make sure everybody knows that. So going from being in leadership and having to take a back seat can be hard. So the feedback from the faculty was they felt so well prepared and so well engaged that at no point did the site team ask a visit that one of our faculty could not answer, or one of our students could not answer. And of course, if they wanted more details about, you know, a granular piece of information that only I could answer, or only the assistant dean could answer, that's great. But, you know, we don't want it to feel canned. We don't want it to feel forced. We want our faculty to really feel like they're the owners of what we do. And that's the feedback that we've gotten, is that they did feel that way.
That's wonderful. That's great, because it is hard for them to feel empowered to answer those questions in their own words because they truly know about the self-study and not just because they memorize things.
Yes. And one of the biggest things, you know, self-study is telling your story. And, you know, you tell your story through data, you tell your story through people. And one of the biggest things that we were proud of as a leadership team and as a school was that in our surveys, our required surveys, they ask about the effectiveness of your assessment processes. And we really didn't blow the world open with those results in previous years. But right before the self-study, we got the results of the last round, and we had achieved a 100% agree or strongly agree on assessment processes being effective in our school. And that only comes through hard work and engagement and bringing everybody into the fold. So so proud of that.
Congratulations. Like I said, I always tell the team, teamwork makes the dream work. And that's exactly what happened there. It's fascinating.
Exactly.
What was the feedback from the visitors, the accreditors?
So we just got, you know, our early preliminary report, and they were pretty pleased with everything that we had in our self-study. You know, of course, there's things that we think we should improve on, and they agreed for the most part with those things. There were some areas where we were a little harder on ourselves, and the site team said, no, lighten up, which is always kind of nice. It's worse to go, in my mind, the other way, you know, not be hard enough on yourself and give up an A and everything. But we were honest about ourselves, and I think that came through. And of course, our students, they were blown away by our students. They really were. It's again, nice to have that validated. Their feedback on engagement, we got some really, I think we got some commendable remarks on our process being really effective. And I hope we can build on that. And there's lots of ways that we can build on that. And the things we need to improve on, whether they're things we don't have any control over, like facilities, you know, everybody would love new facilities, but I have no control over that. I'd pick up a hammer if I could, but you probably you know, making assessment processes more effective and just having more data at our fingertips, you know, that's a big charge for me and for our school. And as you know, we've been working together to make sure that the School of Pharmacy at Wilkes can really leverage all of the data that we have and engage more people in the process, and that it doesn't become this, okay, it's been 6 years, let's take a look at ourselves. we're always taking a look at ourselves.
And that's, it has to be continuous, right?
Yes.
And I would always make this joke at presentations and tell them, hey, everything is about continuous quality improvement, but how continuous is it? Is it at the end of the academic year, at the end of the self-study, before the self-study, or every 4 years or 8 years when you have to start your self-study? And everyone laughs because they know the answer.
Yeah, right? Everybody does it, right?
if you don't have the data, and not data, information, the insights, because everyone has the data, but mm-hmm. if you don't have the insights so you can track trends year over year, then how do you know if you're making improvements, or how are you even measuring your strategic plan?
Right, exactly. I mean, my analogy is like diet and exercise, right? If you ask people the most effective way to get in shape, everybody knows the answer. Everybody knows the answer. But if everybody did the right thing, did the answer, then nobody would be able to sell coffee on the internet that makes you skinny, right? So, you know, we want things to be easier and faster sometimes. And sometimes you just need somebody like a coach, if you will, running alongside you saying, no, it's worth the hard work. It's worth the hard work. It's worth continuing. It's worth making it to the next stop sign or the next tree. Just keep going. So some of that, you know, there's definitely, I took two weeks off after the self-study and I wasn't the only one who kind of needed a break, a mental break. But coming back to it, it's right back onto the assessment processes that we've implemented. Some are brand new. And certainly during a pandemic, there was the natural inclination to say, we'll just take this off and put it down for now. We'll just, this is a weight, and I'm going to take it off my shoulders and I'm going to put it down. And it's hard sometimes to say you can't do that. But again, if you're in that mentality of we need to be constantly moving, we need to be constantly running. It's a marathon, not a sprint. It's not losing 5 pounds to fit in the dress a week before. It's eating right and exercising the whole time. We can really be successful. And so sometimes my role is that. And sometimes in administration, that is very largely your role, is just reminding people to do what they know is the right thing and what they really do want to do. And just
absolutely being on top of things, right? Because I mean, with my work with different institutions, pharmacy, medical, nursing, and so on, the first thing they tell you is that they're always playing this catch-up game. And it's almost like, well, I was walking 12 minutes a mile, and now I need to get to the stop sign in a minute.
Yeah, right.
And they're just running like
to get there. Yeah.
To get there. It's challenging. So how do you stop doing that so that you're seeing the progress, you're moving at a, like they say, you're running at a pace where you can have a conversation with someone that is by your side, right?
Yes.
That feels comfortable. It feels natural, and you're hitting your goal. You're meeting your goal or exceeding it. So
I would say from the biggest thing that you can only control what you can control. And usually that's yourself, you know, usually it's yourself that you can control and your actions. And so for me, you know, it might get, I'm sure there's people that think I'm annoying or whatever else, but it's assessment is always in the conversation. So you might talk about a new thing or a fun new idea, but we're going to talk about how we're going to get something out of that idea. And you may want to research a topic. I love talking through methods on research. So if you know anybody who likes to talk about methods, I'm your person. So, you know, sitting down and saying, okay, what are you really trying to measure? What are you really trying to do here? So sometimes it just takes like just saying the word, how are we going to assess this? How are we going to get something out of this? And it's like a little switch, you know, a little track correction to get people thinking about it. And the other day I was in a meeting and we were talking about a curriculum committee meeting, and we were talking about something, and somebody else said it. They said, how are we going to assess this? And I went, okay, guys, I quit. See you later.
Where's my retirement package?
And I'm not saying that I'm, you know, the best assessment in the world. I'm very fortunate in my colleagues that they're open-minded to new things, and that they're willing to constantly improve. They just didn't always have the language to put around it, and they didn't always have the structure. So, you know, coming in and just sort of setting up the scaffolding really was what I did, and just saying the words assessment again and again and again in every room I could. So now it's just, I guess I just let the train keep rolling.
So when can we expect to read about your assessment method and the assessment method that your program put together? When can we expect it to see it as a white paper, a publication? What are the plans?
That was actually one of the things that came out of our self-study, is that we need to toot our own horn a little bit more as a school. Like I said, we're a smaller school. We're a family. And we really firmly believe in that. Our dean knows the name of every student. It's unbelievable to me that he can, you know, they walk down the hall and say hi to P1s, to P4s. He knows them all, that family feeling. And they were like, you need to put out more of what you're doing. And so it's really been like a moment of, I don't know, sort of just like awareness of like, oh, we are doing things that are worth putting out there. So it's gonna come soon.
Perfect. And let me know when you have something ready so we can distribute that to our listeners. And if it's okay with you, I would share your information with them so that they can reach out to you if they have any questions. But do you recommend any workshops? What were some of the resources that you go to accomplish this?
Oh, a self-study. So, I mean, the you go to the documents they give you most, you know, you stay with the rubric, you stay on top of the requirements. I do a lot of Googling. Again, I'm sort of a self-taught assessment person. And there's a value in that, you know, you hustle a little more, you don't have somebody feeding you the information, you have to kind of go out and source it on your own. So for an accreditation visit, stick close to your foundational documents, stick close to what your accreditors want. Make sure you're looking at that prompt closely and picking up on the buzzwords that really drive the education forward, because, you know, it's healthcare. We're constantly changing in the field, and the education should be keeping track, if not be ahead of the game. So super important to follow that document as closely as you can.
And I think the listeners are going to agree to that, because sometimes you need those boundaries, right? So you can stay within the lane. So you need to make sure you still have innovative room, but you need to stay within the lane. So I'm pretty sure there were a few funny moments during the process, because now we're doing everything virtual. Was there any dog barking, any funny experiences?
I'm trying to think. We did have to kind of tell everybody, like, hey, if you wear a professional mullet, as one of my colleagues calls it, which is business up top and pajama bottoms or party on the bottom, don't stand up. So we had to have some of those conversations of like, make sure that they can't see your pajama pants when they're in the room. But, you know, I think we just worked so hard to prepare everybody that it was just like their A game. It was amazing. We didn't have any dogs barking during a Zoom meeting. We didn't have a little glitchiness on Zoom, you know, somebody drop out and have to come back in and all that fun stuff. But everybody was able to come together. So it was great. It really was.
And I'm pretty sure there were a lot of the phrase of the year, you're on mute.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, you're on mute. I know you're talking, but you're muted. A lot of that, for sure.
We had a lot of that too. So what are you excited about? What motivates you now that you're done with the self-study? What's ahead?
Oh, you know, I'm a silver linings person. So we are going through one of the biggest challenges as a country, as a world, but certainly on the micro level as educators. This is a new frontier that we have been forced into. But I think the silver lining is that it is a great time for innovation. Mm-hmm. And talking about the creativity that can come out of this. So constantly pushing for, how can we do that assessment better? How can we be more inclusive? How can we be more acknowledging of the needs of our students, which are bigger now than they ever were before? Mm-hmm. They're not just in the classroom. Our students are learning at home. They're learning in environments that aren't equitable. You know, some students have great internet connections and other students don't. Some students are in an apartment by themselves and others are at home with brothers and sisters who are doing virtual school K through 12. Some have parents who lost their jobs. You know, there's all these varying needs that we're seeing even more now because they're out of our classroom, which is a very controlled environment, if you think about it. And so I think what I'm excited about is really to bring equity to the forefront of assessment. And this is something that the National Institute for the NILOA Learning Outcomes Assessment has been talking about. They've published for 2-3 years, they've been talking about equity and assessment. They've published some papers on it. And I really wanna see some of that come to healthcare education because it's easy to say we all need to meet the same standard. And that's true. Our patients, our people deserve a quality of care across all healthcare providers. And so there's that baseline we want to provide. But we also want to make sure that everybody has a pipeline to a career that is that they love, that is fulfilling, and that is hopefully financially fulfilling. And so, you know, one of my big things that I'm excited about is how we can leverage technology, how we can leverage assessment, how we can leverage this new environment to make sure that students are learning equitably in an environment that is not at all equitable and that highlights our inequities very starkly.
What are the top three trends of, like, for instance, what are the top three technology innovative solutions that you see that our schools are gonna implement to survive these new challenges?
I think there's gonna be a lot more interest in electronic testing. Virtual and remote testing with either AI or live proctoring instructors. And we've done our own with Zoom and ExamSoft and been able to do some sort of inside free-ish proctoring. So I think there's going to be more of an interest in that. And I think a lot of those sort of programs have been in existence for a while, but they've been out of the reach financially for smaller schools. But I'm hoping that because of this, we're going to start to see some equity there as well. So I'm excited about electronic testing. You know, Zoom, when they made it, I'm sure they didn't think about an environment like this. But these virtual meeting environments and the ability for us to see people are something that I'm excited about because whether or not we come back in person, you know, I think we've learned that we don't need to be locked in an office 8 hours a day to connect to people. We don't need to be at a conference table to connect to people. And so I'm excited about these methods that give us ways to connect virtually with our students and other people. I just, you know, think about how we can deliver an educational program across the world.
Yeah.
You know, a really truly global education, I think I'm excited about as well. And I think there's a lot of things we need to confront in higher ed. So, you know, I'm always excited about the ability to take a hard look at ourselves. So, you know, I'm excited about testing platforms. I'm excited about bringing equity. Ooh, I'm excited about using NFLUX, that's for sure.
And we're excited to help you.
I mean, you know, as somebody, again, self-taught, homegrown, I do a lot of Excel spreadsheets. I don't shy away from hard work. But sometimes I'm like, oh, there's something more I could do if I weren't shackled to, you know, hand doing all of my outcomes. So I'm excited about the creativity that it's going to allow for and the conversations it's going to allow for, because it takes some of these, you know, things that can be done, not manually, that can be automated and makes them automated. So anything that requires that, you know, takes human capital out of it and automates, but allows us to, you know, review, I think that's great. It frees us up for so many other things.
Our goal is to make sure that we're saving you time so that you can dedicate it to what matters, which is student success.
Absolutely.
It's not managing data on spreadsheets and doing project management in Google Docs.
Right. And, you know, back to the beginning where we talked about how I got here, I'm an educator. I love seeing students learn. I love that look of awareness and that light going on in their eyes and even that shared, you know, sometimes they share something back and you're like, wow, I learned something in this classroom today as the professor. So I'm, you know, I think that's awesome.
Megan, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing all of this with our listeners. I know they're going to be asking you, where can we find more information about your method? We want to learn more. So what's the best way they can reach out to you?
I have, you know, a personal email and a work email. So either of those are appropriate. And I'll send you my personal email as well. I'm on, oh boy, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. You can kind of find me all over the place. Not that I'm super active on all those things, but that's where I am. But I'm always happy to talk assessment with anybody who would and share ideas back and forth. I think that's great. So any of your listeners that want to chat, I'm here for you.
Thank you so much for that. And we'll make sure that we add that into the session so that they have your information and they can reach out to you.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to today's series on what you need to know to survive the self-study. You can subscribe to our events by going to nflux.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn where we post announcements about our solution and resources like today's session. I'm Alejandra Sertuche and you have been listening to Ed Luminaries.
You've just listened to Ed Luminaries. Inspiring stories and ideas from educators to educators with Alejandra Sertuche. Connect with us at edluminaries.com to join the conversation and access the show notes. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.